Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 662. It's the 14th of December, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Rob Proctor, CEO for Audioboom, ticker Boom. And he goes over their trading update and answers private investor questions. I also have Doc Holliday, small cap commentator, talking about CloudTag, Metal Tiger, Nocetera, Audioboom, and IG Index. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours, and the top three most liked RNSs on the website today, and the top three most disliked RNSs on the website today. Don't forget, anything you hear on this podcast is just information. It is not intended to be investment advice. Please do your own research.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Audioboom. That's Boom ticker. It's Rob Proctor. Rob, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Hope you're well.
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. And I know we're a bit delayed because you've had an issue with the trains and stuff, and it's still a bit of a nightmare. But thanks for coming on anyway.
Good old Southern. I'd like to stop in that company, please. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, you've had a trading update, and we'll go into that in a bit. We've got a couple of questions from private investors. But before that, for anyone not aware of what you do, Rob, could you give us a summary as to what Audioboom is all about, please?
Yeah, Audioboom, I think some most people know these days, it's you know, we're primarily a B2B company. We provide a digital audio platform to allow podcasters and broadcasters, big publishers, to create, upload, store, and then distribute that digital audio around the web. We work very closely with Apple iTunes and Google Play, Spotify, Deezer on the distribution side. And then on the content publisher side, you know, we've got nearly 4,000 content creators on the platform. And then the monetization, we do pre, mid, and post-roll advertising. And growing exponentially now is that hosted in-red advertising, which is doing obviously amazingly well in the US. But now finally, the UK media agencies have copped on, which is great. So we're currently running in-red campaigns for the likes of Disney, the UK government, just about to bring on, you know, Nissan and Slimfast and DraftKings and, you know, Bet on Brazil, a whole bunch of others. So that's what we do.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the update is very good. Like I said, you know, revenue has exceeded almost six times what you did this time last year at 1.3 million. But like you said, and I've had, you know, I've had a bit of a conversation with people on Vox Markets, and some people are critical, some people are praising it. And I did point out, I mean, listen, to be honest, I mean, you're just over 2 years old. This is a new sector, you know, like you couldn't have done this 5 years ago. And so I said, there's always going to be, you know, hiccups and costs in this kind of thing. And I've got to say, I'm a whole of the stock, so I'm going to be pretty biased, I suppose.
Yeah.
But let's go into the figures there. So the revenue is very good.
What I'd like to do is almost give a bit of a macro view on this first. Like you say, 5 years ago, this industry didn't exist. We know from all the latest research from, you know, Edison, Pew Research, Neiman Labs, the podcast industry, UK and US, by 2020 will be between $1 billion and $1.2 billion. We're a company, given our market position right now, that should be looking absolutely to own 10% of that market by 2020. What we do today in terms of audience acquisition, content acquisition, and growth within our major markets is all designed to deliver us 10% of that market in 2020. If we don't do that work today, if we don't acquire that audience today, if we don't sell that advertising today, we don't get to 10% of $1 billion in 2020. You know,
yeah.
I guess the easy comparison, funny comparison, you know, the darling of the internet world right now is Uber. They lost $2.1 billion last year on a $30, $40 billion valuation. They rent out bloody minicabs, for Christ's sakes. If you don't spend to acquire and dominate your market, you won't be one of those one or two or three companies that dominate the market, which is what always happens in digital. If we want 10% of the market in 2020, we have to do the work now.
Yeah, that's also a point I made. I said land grab is expensive, but you've got to do it. And also, you are listed in the UK, and in the UK, people do tend to focus on revenue and profits, which is a good thing. But in America, they do value a growth a lot more highly, and we all know that. And you are focused in the US. So for people who are quite critical now of the numbers, let's look through. So the revenue is good. We know that exceeded expectations, but there's the other side of costs. Now, we talked about the costs there, and why are the costs quite high? Because I worked out over the last 4 months, I mean, you did raise some money in August there, but around about 2.6 million cash burn over the last 4 months. And so why is this so high, and how are you going to bring that down if you are going to bring it down?
Well, we raised 2.5 back in August. Of that, we actually got 2.3 because you got all of the fees. We restructured our business. We've lost 40%, almost 40% of our UK headcount. That comes at a cost short term with redundancies and all of that stuff that you have to do because it's the law. So we've had exceptional costs there. Also, we have heavily recruited into the US team, but especially directly into the commercial team. There is a cost of hiring those type of people, as all of your listeners will understand that have run businesses. Good salespeople, great salespeople that are already at other companies or whatnot that you want to poach because they come with the Rolodex, they hit the ground running, which our guys have. Look at the revenue figures. That comes at a cost. So if we take out the extraordinary cost, and let's say you have $300,000 or $400,000 out of the number that we had. So we had 2.3, take out 4, leaves 1.9. Then we take out the 7 that we've still got, leaves 1.2. You divide that out over 4.5 months, it comes in at about 300-odd K. But that was starting back in August where we haven't made any of those cuts and they're coming through. So you look at our burn moving forward and with our growing revenues, that monthly burn is now, I don't know, let's say 250, and dropping on a monthly basis all the way through Q1 and Q2 through next year. And, where that number's going to be, obviously that's dependent on us keeping those revenue growth numbers going. We've already got pre-booked 1.1 million for 17. A lot of that is front-ended in Q1, obviously, because that's, the way campaigns are booked. We're booking more into Q1, Q2, Q3 already. And that's before we even factor in all of the programmatic sales with the likes of Cumulus and Target Spot, Pandora, Big Mobile, and all of the other companies that we're working with. So we've got a number of 5.4 out in the market for next year. We did sixfold increase this year. Are we looking to do internally a sixfold increase for next year? For damn sure, that's exactly what we're going for. But we've got 5.4 in the market. And we're confident we'll hit that. We hit those numbers with our reduced costs, and we're in great shape, 317.
Okay, and so are you, a previous guidance, I think it was suggesting off the top of my head, was Q1 2018, EBITDA positive, and maybe at the end of 2017, break even. Is that still what you're aiming for?
Oh, absolutely. Well, me personally, and how have I, set up the team here in the UK and in the US and the focus. Are we driving to try and do that early? Yes, of course we are. But, we have that guidance out in the market. We are confident that all of our projections, both in terms of cost reduction and revenue growth, and the growth in our gross margin as well, as we, do different things with the content and how we're sharing with our partners. We're confident in the number that's out there, and we're driving towards it. I don't think, I don't think the cash position should come as a shock to anybody. We told, when we did the raise back in August, we put the stuff out there about China, even though, we were in a conversation. Yes, it was legal to lawyers and all of that. But, as I say, if we are going to be one of those one, two, or three companies globally that dominate our space by 2020, we have to do that work today. You have to go out and you have to secure your chunk of this industry. Because if you don't, other people will. And if we want to have a long-term future, it's what we have to do today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, talking about that, there's a question about that. First of all, you mentioned the Chinese possible fundraising that's not happening anymore. So, you know, what happened there? And also, someone says, you know, you got the cash now, $710,000 end of year. You'll obviously need more cash until you get to the end of the year. Can you explain what's going to happen there?
Yeah. Like I say, I don't think, you know, I did fundraising first. Given what we announced in the conversations with China and the level of that funding we were looking for, that hasn't changed. I think maybe where we're looking from that funding to come from, both in terms of individuals, institutions, and actually the country of origin for that money. You know, that isn't China. We're not putting any focus in there. I mean, the fiduciary complexity of trying to get outbound investment from China literally was soaking up all of the senior management time to do that. As you can tell from our figures, we've got plenty of other work that we need to be getting on with, so that's what we're focused on. In terms of, you know, the business generally, what was that second question?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously you'll need funding here, because, like you said, you are aiming for 5-4 next year. Yeah. Are you in talks for funding? I mean, are there... I mean, you're obviously, you know, more focused in the US. I mean, do you have talks out there as well about funding? What?
I think everybody knows what the aim rules are at this point. I think our need for that growth funding to secure the market and also drive forward what we're doing is the same today as it was back in August when, you know, all of that stuff was back in the market. That hasn't changed. So, you know, yes, we are obviously just starting the process of talking with certain key individuals and institutions and some trade partners about how we move this business forward in a meaningful way.
Okay, all right. Because, I mean, it was suggested, you know, back in August, I don't know if that's changed, that the funding would be no less than 2.5p. That would be tricky now, though, wouldn't it?
Given the numbers and our growth projections, free for the pudding, obviously, but I don't know how tricky that would be, truth be told. You know, you look at our business and what we're doing and the sector we're in and our dominant position within that business. You know, I think our market cap today is like 13 million. You know, you're worth what you're worth. I get that. I know digital startups in the US that are in our space that don't even have a product yet, let alone 4,000 partners and revenues that are doubling quarter on quarter, that are raising $5, 10, and $15 million on $40 and $50 million valuation off plan right now because of the growth that's expected in the podcast sector. We're sitting there leading our market and our market cap's 13 million.
I
hate to say it, but AIM's a joke. It's a joke. And, you know, the macro UK investment community at BC level and down is a joke. That's just the way it is.
Okay, all right. But so, I mean, as far as the growth you're getting now, I mean, like I said, you're confident you can keep doing this next year, but how long can you keep growing like this for? You know, you did mention there you won 10% of that 1 billion. I mean, is that achievable or is it a dream?
It should be more than achievable. I'm trying to play it down at 10% as a name. The market itself is going to quadruple in the next 3 years. We are already one of the dominant players in that market. We could easily expect that all of our growth metrics will go beyond that. But actually, being one of the big dogs in the space means that you grow exponentially bigger than the market itself because you capture more of the market. So, there's absolutely no pipe dream. This industry will be worth $1 to $1.2 billion in 2020. We are a leading player in this market. Our job, our investors' job, our board's job, is to make sure we're one of the 1, 2, or 3 big players in 3 years' time. That is one of the dominant players as we move forward. That's our job. That's what we have to do.
Okay, all right. There's a couple of questions here on the technical side.
Yeah.
Now, you changed recently from listens to UFRs or unique file requests, and someone said, can you explain in layman's terms, what's the difference between listens and unique file requests?
Yeah, mate, absolutely. So the Internet Advertising Bureau have put out a set of guidelines now, and when you look at what happened in digital generally and in video and all of that, guidelines from IAB within 2 to 3 years become industry practice. So what we've decided to do, because we were running a pretty clean ship anyway, is actually adopt the IAB standards around file requests. The issue in our industry is what to listen and what's not a listen. Is it download from iTunes and listen? Well, absolutely it's not, because you don't know if anybody's listened to it. And there are many variations on what is or isn't a listen. So as a definitive, we've taken the IAB standard of unique file requests as being the metric that we're going to report. So again, I don't want to get too technical, but let's say I'm a user on a platform and I go to iTunes and request a file to download to myself. In making that request, I'll get what's called a header request from Apple. I'll then get a secondary header request from Apple. I'll then get a file return request, and then I'll actually get the play. So actually I'm getting four requests there, but under the IAB standards of unique file requests, I only count one. Not all four, because okay, they're not unique, I only count one. Using our old listen metric, where we added up all of the stats like everybody else in the industry does, our old listen figure now would be up close to 100 million. Using unique file requests is the cleanest, most accurate, most empirical measure that we can provide, both to our investors, but also to the media agencies when they're buying advertising from us. Now, our competition isn't doing that right now, and that's fine, because that's up to them. Sometime over the next year to 18 months, all of the media agencies will demand to know what your unique file request number is, because they're only going to want to buy listens that they can more or less try to guarantee is a real listen, not some spurious head request from iTunes.
Yeah. So essentially, it's more accurate, and it is the industry standard that people will be adopting. Okay. All right. So the next thing is about CPM rates. Many people won't know about that, but someone says, at what CPM rate has the current revenue been achieved, and do you expect this rate to increase?
There are three types of CPMs. So you've got a regular CPM for a pre or a post roll advert. And let's say in the industry, on average, that's about $3 right now. You've then got an eCPM, which is an effective CPM. So if we're running, let's say, a campaign for DraftKings or Bet on Brazil, where somebody goes to register for something and you get paid on the registration, and you might get, you know, $10 or $12 or $20 every time somebody registers, you can then divide back by the number of adverts that you put out there, by the number of registrations you got, divide that by the amount you get paid, and that gives you an effective CPM, an eCPM. And that's quite a common model for direct advertising. And then the third type of CPM that we're getting, and the area that's really growing quickly, is for that in-red or host-red advertising that's kind of in the middle of the audio itself. So you, for instance, would read out the advert for whatever it might be. Now, typically, you know, a CPM for an in-red advert is anything between, you know, $15 to $20, anything up to $60, $65 per thousand for that host-read advertising, because it's the most engaged and it's the most effective. Actually, the key number for all of those is not just the CPM or the effective CPM or the in-red CPM. It's actually your sell-through rate. Of potential 1,000 ad spots, how many of those did I actually sell? And that shows you, the efficiency of your sales operation, but also actually what the willingness is and growth or shrinkage in that number tells you what the sentiment is within the industry, the sector, and obviously the media agency. So, you know, when we're looking at setting up the model of our budgets for next year, now we've actually got empirical data from the last two or three quarters that we can apply to next year's forecast. And again, looking at all of that and how we're blending that together, you know, the number that we have in the market of 5.4 million for next year, I mean, that would only be, you know, a fourfold increase from what we did in 16. As I say, you know, and that's the number we've got out there, and that's the number we're going to aim to beat. And I think we're fully confident on that, given the sixfold increase that we've had this year.
Marvellous. All right, Rod, listen, at Vox, I mean, your RNS was the most liked today, but also the most disliked, but you had twice as many likes as dislikes. But so, you know, people, if people aren't following you on Vox now, can you give us sort of three reasons why they should hit that follow button to get RNSs from you?
I think anybody that is a, if you like, a serious investor or, you know, a mid to long-term holder of stock, you know, you're looking for stocks that, you know, or companies that are in a growing sector. We click that box. You should be looking for companies that understand how to work their margin, you know, by increasing sell-through, by reducing costs and all of that. I think we've demonstrated and are demonstrating that we're doing that. So I think we click that box. And I think the last one is, you know, you want a company that is now demonstrating both be able to reduce those costs, but can increase its sales quarter on quarter, month on month, however you want to judge that. And again, you look at our 16 results, and we're definitely doing that. So we're in a strong sector. We've got a handle on our business. We've proven our business model, and we're now growing it out. I mean, as a business, or as an investor, those should be the three things that you look for in a business to invest in.
Yeah, and personally, Rob, today, I mean, the stock price has come off a bit. I think it's about 6% down today. But, you know, as a business right now, are you personally happy with the trajectory you're on? And are you confident of achieving your goals?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, like I say, for all of the reasons that I've just highlighted, you know, you know, if we were a private company in this circumstance right now, as I see other companies in the US and whatnot, who would love to be in the position that we're in. They would love to be doing the kind of numbers that we're doing. And, you know, they're raising $20-odd million at $40 or $50 million valuation. And they would love to have our business.
Yeah. Okay. Rob, lovely to chat to you as always. And I look forward to the next update. Speak again soon, fella.
All right. No worries. Thank you very much indeed, Justin. Cheers, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
And joining me on the podcast right now is small cap aficionado. It's Doc Holliday. You're right, Doc. He's on the podcast today, Doc Holliday.
Hey, we've not done that for a while, have we? Hello.
No, it's nice. So you should do a bit more of that. I think to most of your podcasts you do, you should have that in the background, just playing along, and do it in rhyme. Right. Lots of stuff been going on. You know, a lot of the popular stocks have had good news, bad news. What are you focusing on? What are you looking at, Doc, at the moment?
Focusing is perhaps not quite the word, but certainly keeping abreast of or you know, trying to keep up with some of the news for certain. The markets have sort of slowed down this, as expected. You know, the Santa rally has yet to commence and is unlikely to. We've had a pretty dry sort of September, October, November and December. I mean, September was okay. Summer was great. It is what it is. The markets are where they are. We've seen some big sort of news from a number of companies I've commented on. Most notably, the sort of price action starting to react more favorably in Nostra Terra. So that one's finally starting to bear some fruit. You know, we talked about it again at 1.25, 1.5. The potential for Cantors to have been short in the market. We're now starting to see the price action show some type of covering taking place. And there's clearly an interest from the buy side. So, you know, would I be surprised to see that go on to 3 or 4p? No. You know, is momentum still sort of a bit of an issue for them? Naturally, I think that's the case. I think the news that the company have put out is good. I think that the narrative from Matt has been extremely fair, and he's doing everything he possibly can to answer investors' concern by the additional influx of cash, and that the company have got sufficient funds to take the business through. I'll expect there'll be more news from Pine Mills, various other bits and pieces. So that's going well.
Moving on. I just think there seems to be a verve with Matt. When I chatted to him last twice I've spoken to him, he seems quite excited about prospects happening there and, genuinely going forward. And it was a nice deal from Mosman. When I read that RNS, I thought, hang on, I'm sure I've read this RNS before. And it was like very similar to Mosman. I don't know what they thought they were doing, but it was nuts because that rose strongly, didn't it, off the back of the original RNS. And it turns out that Nostra Terra had the deal, really. And so it's only fitting, I suppose, we see a similar type of rise in Nostra Terra,
Yeah, it just seems with Nostra that it's happening over a sort of longer period, and I think the deal being sneaked from Mosman, their share price went up about 250% in a day, I think, one of the days. It appears with Nostra that things are just ticking along at a slower pace. I don't think that's a bad thing. There's still lots of different variables and outcomes that could play out, and maybe that, is why the floodgates are yet to open, but it's moving in the right direction. The news from the company, the narrative coming out, appears positive, and that makes a big change. And at this time of year, maybe it's just a silver lining for some of those long-term shareholders.
Yeah. Any other stocks? What are you looking at?
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, we talked about, I think, CloudTag and Metal Tiger when we were last on. A quick one on there. CloudTag have obviously suspended. I've been asked a fair bit. There seems to be a massive sort of war of words on CloudTag.
Yeah.
Don't have any interest, long, short, or other. I think the type of narrative I've put out has been quite balanced. It's hopefully presented where there's been opportunities to make a turn in the market without carrying all of the risk. I don't have any emotional thought on the business. It's quite obvious that the funding came from an incorporated business out in the US, which was clearly linked to an Australian business with a long and short fund and various other interesting finance instruments attached to them. A very wealthy family associated with that business, and they're clearly going in the right direction. They've put the money into CloudTag. We've seen the share price sort of go from 20p down to sort of 5 or 6p, back to 16p. The company continuously, probably, and again, this is where the probability comes in, because I don't know exactly what's gone on inside, but I'm sure the Nomad's been breathing down their neck saying, look, you put news out on the 5th, there's prices going up on the 6th and 7th, all of this speculation is coming out, you're writing to investors and putting emails out, etc. This market is just not this. It's just not fair. It's not operating the way it should be. This volatility is just unrealistic, and we're looking to put the brakes on this. And I think they put another RNS out to say there was no reason for the price movement. The announcement on the 5th was as it was, and there'd been no changes. I think there was just a bit too much kind of movement in it, and I don't think that the Nomad felt it was a fair and orderly market. Therefore, the shares are suspended. They haven't come out and said it's due to disorderly market conditions. They haven't come out and said anything. What we do know is that they're going to launch their wearable device in the next couple of days, and there's a great deal of speculation building up around that. Nothing's really changed there, Justin. If the company come out, they get that wearable device out into the market, it's as super duper as people hope, then there's no reason why this can't continue to go on, because the small cap markets, unfortunately, momentum are 8/10 of the rule, even if fundamentally the valuation is insane. On the downside, further delays, should the company be dragged over the coals by the Nomad, then you because some of the information that's entered the public domain is not correct or it's unfair, then you're going to expect it to go hard the other way, or potentially it'll remain suspended. So there's a lot of ups and downs at CloudTag, and again, it's got many synergies, as perhaps Metal Tiger, etc. I think they've probably kept a better counsel for all of the sins of the guys that have been involved there. And I'm jokingly saying that is, you know, those guys have managed to keep their sort of counsel a lot better. I think whilst there's questions over the valuation of the Botswana assets, the Thai assets, the trading division, some of the shenanigans with the board, etc., etc. And I do still believe that Pirelli's a decent guy, so not quite sure what's gone on there, and have some cynicism about a 30-year-old guy coming at to the wheel to drive this vehicle in the right direction. I think the reality is, in the background, you've still got Johnson and you've got Grammer and a few others pulling the strings from behind the curtains. And on that basis, you look at the company, they've gone out, they've raised money. It was expected. The board change was expected. A lot of the bits and pieces that have happened have been expected. There's been a little bit of spoofing in the background that this company, if they raise cash, would do it at a premium. They haven't done it on the mid. But I think now all of the bad news is out of the way. And I guess there's a bit of a festive parting shot for Metal Tiger. I've commented enough on them over the year. I'd say all in all, most of what I've put out there has come to, you know, bear fruit. I know it's got the backs up of some of the investors out there. I'm not the one that's making decisions for the company. It's the board and the company that do that. I just kind of figure that that, you know, now they've raised the cash, they've made all of these changes, they've got a duty of care to those shareholders that were buying this at 4, 5, and 6p, or certainly within those regions, to get some material news into the market and get that price, you know, marching back into that direction. I'm sure there's going to be one big hurrah to come. There always is with these companies, particularly when you're seeing the musical chairs in the boardroom.
Yeah, well, going back to CloudTag here, right? I mean, I'm not involved in any way, long, I don't go short or anything anyway, but I mean, what I don't understand here is the lack of clarity, you know? It seems to me the CloudTag sort of holders and supporters are saying the company has requested a suspension. People not supporting CloudTag saying, no, it's the Nomad or AIM regulation. And they've got this rebrand coming out. I'm not sure what this rebrand is, because as far as I'm aware, you can't buy a CloudTag product anyway. Can you sort the rebranding a product that hasn't been released? Is that the case? As a casual observer.
Well, I mean, mate, you know, what we did see is, and again, clarity has been a big issue from day one with these guys, hasn't it? Let's be honest. I mean, you know, the financing and the clarity around that, you know, was very woolly. You know, the reference to the wearable device, again, very woolly. And you've got all of these kind of bullish investors that are pointing to, you know, the CEO when he's interviewed with this little device on his wrist. What is that? Is that the new great device? And, you know, then there's all the speculation of what will happen once this launch takes place. But, you know, I don't know where you can purchase a device. Certainly not going to be coming out at the busiest time of the year. That's for certain. It's too late for that one. That ship sailed. Who knows? You know, they could come out and say, this is the device, we've been keeping it low key because we've got, you know, we had a principal interest or order which was going to be, you know, through the roof. And then it's a Brewster's, you know, millions moment, isn't it? You know, where no matter how hard it seems to, they seem to make a mess of things. They get it right. And the price goes up and up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think this is just too deep a speculation for my liking. And on that basis, you know, I just don't get involved with things that I don't understand. And at times that you know, that goes against me, but often it helps guide me through the sort of choppy water. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, mate. I think there's a lot of inconsistencies and a lot of clarity that's needed. And if they can get that, then that could be the big catalyst to that big move and next leg up. And if you don't get it, and it does get back to market and things, you know, there's any sniff of uncertainty, it's going to go the other way. It's the same story. It's not changed. Keeps playing out the same way. The last time I think we spoke about this, it was 19, 20, 21p. And I took a bit of stick because I made comments about delays or setbacks back then, and it's come off hard. But naturally, this that swing and movement is presenting great opportunity to individuals in the markets. You've got to remember that. You know, if you're trading this stock, or, you know, you're savvy, you're protecting capital, you're boxing clever, you're ducking and weaving, there's been a lot of potential. The liquidity has been incredible. Same with Metal Tiger. Look, I just see that the synergies with different companies out there, and I think Metal Tiger have kept the better counsel. I think, for all of my criticism, you know, the board have been far more measured than the guys over at CloudTag. But the reality is you've got to fundamentally start to back up what you've been talking about through the year. I don't know if CloudTag can do that just yet. Metal Tiger can potentially do it. But again, it's a case of, you know, they need to start showing the hand, both companies.
Yeah. Do you know what? There's a fascinating little article on Wikipedia called The Hype Cycle. And people have asked me before, am I involved in CloudTag? And I said, no, I missed the train there. And they said, no, you haven't. And I think if you look at any tech company, it goes through this hype cycle where initially it really rises strongly on the hope, essentially, of what it can do, you know? And then when reality kicks in of revenue and stuff, it starts to come off a bit. And you've seen that with Audioboom to a certain extent. They went through the hype cycle. They're that initial spike up when they first launched this next big thing. And now they're having to deal with the reality of revenue. And even though the revenue today they announced was very good growth, they've still got, you know, high cash burn. And so, you know, it takes a while for this to find the ground, find a level, and then start building again. And like I said, CloudTag still has to go through that period where it's got a product on the shelf, and starts to get revenue, hopefully starts to get traction. And it's still a long journey, isn't it? You know, and we're still in the early stages of that hype cycle, you know? And it's a start of a long journey. Who knows where it will go, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, look, the greatest think tanks in the world create, you know, great ideas. Unfortunately, many of those ideas, you know, again, never come to bear fruit. But in the initial sort of principle of creating an idea or a concept, there's got to be some successes and failures along the way. And I think, you know, Audioboom as a company had a great deal of interest initially. As you say, they're having to put the hard yards in now. I think the guys are taking on more in New York. There seems to be a more US focus. And I had a chat to a well-known sort of guy down in the city, a friend of mine, about that business just this morning, and we both sort of agree that if this was listed out in the US, it'd be worth sort of tenfold where it is today in the UK.
Yeah, but,
you know, there's no good making excuses up. What you've got to do is you've got to give that people some type of understanding as to why this is worth a lot more than it's being valued at today. And, you know, yes, the revenues are increasing. Yes, you know, the footfall's increasing, but you've got those questions now hanging over. If the Chinese aren't coming in, who's coming in? And that's why the price is where it is today. And I'm a shareholder, so I'm not, you know, I'm not negative on it. I'm a realist.
Yeah, no, I've been having, you know, chat on Fox Markets this morning, and I said, listen, and one person did say that they're more focused in the US on growth, and over here in the UK, which we're, you know, where they're listed, boom, we're more focused on revenue, profit, and all that, which is a good thing. But like I said, in America, they see growth, they go for growth completely, and they value it on growth pretty much. And but you know, like I said, it seems, and I've said, basically, in summary, growth and revenue is good for Audioboom. They need to focus on cash burn a bit, you know, because that is still increasing. But they have said they're going to reduce that by 40% in 2017. So hopefully that's true. Marvellous, Doc. Is that it? So any other thoughts? I'll be seeing you this
weekend.
Well,
mate, just before I go, I mean, I don't know if you just had that notification come through on Box. It's one of the beautiful things about this site. Mm-hmm. But it looks like there's been an RNS from Metal Tiger to say that their initial draft for their approval for mining operations have been approved. You know, the CEO's come out and said that Metal Tiger is pleased to be able to report with regard to the proposed Mineral Act, which we consider represents a significant positive step forward. So there you go, even more news from the business, and a bit more for people to speculate on. There's been a couple of big pullbacks before I go on IG Group. I put my hand out to catch the falling knife. It impaled me good style. I started to scale in there at 590. I think the lowest I've bought is 460. I've got an average just over £5, about 5.10. So I'm down on that one about 10, 15, maybe even a bit more percent. But I think when you go and look at the company, it's just at about $1.5 billion or more wiped off its market cap due to an announcement released by the regulators. And this is across the board. It's not specific to IG Group. It's a situation where they're looking to try to reform the markets and the spread betting leveraged account business that's being done. So many of these accounts blow up. There's an 82% loss. Kind of ties in with investing on AIM, doesn't it? About 90% of people losing, the harsh reality of things. And I noted that you'd sort of flagged up on the chart that what I'm assuming is the five-year low is sort of a decent potential buy level at 420, 430. I totally agree. When I was buying it myself higher up, I'd suggested that if the level didn't hold, that it would potentially go and back test that five-year low at 420 or around the area. I just kind of figure that should that one over the next few sessions start to steady out, start to smooth out some of that volatility, that could present a decent opportunity. That's IGG. Yeah. And also, I know that Advanced Oncotherapy, one of Alan Green's from the stable, has taken a right old smacking recently. It's come down from £2 to 50p. That's been due to some of the relationships with their Chinese counterparts, allegedly being unhappy about the timing of their light device for the treatment, I think, of cancer. So that seems to have thrown a spanner in the works. They were expecting them to have a workable, functioning piece of equipment by, I think, 2019. It's been said it'll be 2021 now. There's been a lot of debate about that, should we say, with the bears in the market. But it's, you know, it's lost 75% of its value. And unfortunately, I had the pleasure of meeting Nick Plowman, one of the top, you know, oncology doctors in the UK in Harley Street last year. And the one thing I took from that encounter on meeting him was that he was a very capable and able guy, very well respected in the circles of oncology, cancer treatments, etc. I'd be so surprised if these guys have put the name to this and it's just one big sort of fraud or one big sort of con. I just don't believe it. And I think when you look at companies like that, you're starting to find a bit of a level now at this 50p. Any sniff of interest, if you start seeing those signs of a reversal, could well be a quick move back to a quid on that one. Yeah. Again, I don't know the great detail of what's gone on with the business, so I'm sort of just sort of speculating and rambling a little bit. But having met that particular guy last year, I know for a fact that these guys are extremely well respected around you know, oncology circles, and I think he's in the St. Bart's as well, so another well-respected hospital. So again, if you sort of got an interest in that sort of thing, that could be an opportunity too.
Marvellous. Doc, speak soon, fella.
Okay, mate, thanks. Take care.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are at number five, Boss Global Holdings, that's BOS. At four, Ascent Resources, AST. At three, Amrit Pharma, AMYT. At two, Andlas Energy, ADL. And number one, the most followed company on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours is Bakley Energia. That's BKY, Buckle Energy, and of course the uranium project there in Spain. And it's definitely a company worth doing some research on. Very interesting what things happening there, especially with the you know, the market around uranium, and that's at rock bottom. But the deals they're doing, the shareholder register, I've done a blog on those companies, I know a lot about them. And they're worth checking out and doing some research on. Like I said, nothing here is investment advice, all information. Okay, time for the top three most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. At three is ASA Resources, ticker ASA, management changes. At two, Boss Global Holdings, operational update and 2017 outlook. And number one, the most liked RNS on the website this morning was Audioboom trading update. And like I said to Rob earlier, top three most disliked RNSs were three, Management Resource Solutions, MRS, Mrs. Company website. At two, Extract Resources, second most disliked, Circular, GM, and change of registered office. And at number one, Audioboom, training update. But I've got to say, had double the amount of more than double the amount of likes it did dislikes. So worth checking out. By all means, submit a stock for the edition today. I haven't done one for your watch list, but if you know of a company that you think should be on other people's watch lists, please submit it. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. You'll see a link there to one of my posts. Scroll down until you see a question that says, do you know of a stock that you think should be on people's watch lists? Then please click here, fill in the form, and I could be featuring it on a future podcast sometime in the future. Could be very soon in the future. In fact, I haven't got one at the moment, so it could be tomorrow. Who knows? So go there, please. Thanks very much. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.